But what we really sort of want to think about is the avoidance of or the reduction of those things that increase our inflammation. Now, that's much easier said than done. But if we look at ourselves internally and externally and sort of attack it broadly, meaning the foods we eat, the exercise we get, the supplements we take, the way that we handle and manage stress, every little bit actually does a lot to buffer and to help temper those high levels of chronic inflammation.
Hi there, and welcome to the Mother of Reinvention show. I'm Megan Francis, your host, and in this podcast, we're talking about all the ways women reinvent ourselves as we move toward our 40s and beyond. Whether you're hoping to make a career change, are rediscovering parts of yourself that went dormant during the early years of motherhood, or maybe are trying to pay more attention to your health and wellness, Mother of Reinvention is here to inspire and inform you as you ask yourself, what's next? So over the past several months, I have really done a deep dive into how women experience perimenopause and menopause, what's really happening in our bodies during the stage of life that can start as early as our mid-30s. And one of the things that comes up again and again is inflammation, both how dangerous chronic inflammation can be for our bodies, as well as how our diets and lifestyles play a role. But where it gets confusing is that there seems to be a lot of disagreement out there about which foods cause and which foods prevent inflammation, and what ways of eating will really help us feel good and look good as we get older. There are definitely some loud proponents of very specific diets out there, but the more experts I talk to, the more I'm realizing that while there are definitely some principles that everyone seems to agree with, there are just as many that are in debate. Personally, I'm really starting to see the benefit of simplicity and consistency. If you have all the time in the world to research ingredients and painstakingly plan your meals, then maybe honing in on a diet that is truly optimal, whatever that means, is doable or even fun for you. And of course, some women are dealing with sensitivities and intolerances that make it really necessary for them to make sweeping changes. But I think most of us make sacrifices and trade-offs here and there. And to my thinking, there's something to be said for choosing a way of eating where those trade-offs don't totally derail you. After all, climbing back up on a horse you fell off of is a lot harder and hurts a lot more than if you'd just taken it a little easier on the ride, right? So I loved talking with today's guest, Rachel Hughes. Rachel is a certified nutritional coach and creator of the Meno Memos, where she acts as a guide for women who are experiencing perimenopause and menopause symptoms. Rachel really breaks down the difference between acute and chronic inflammation and explains why chronic long-term inflammation can be so damaging to your body, as well as letting us know how to avoid or even reverse it. She shares her personal philosophy around nutrition and movement, and spoiler alert, she is also a big believer in finding healthy ways to eat that are simple and sustainable and feel good. Rachel and I also spent some time talking about disparity in the quality of healthcare that women of color experience, and why this systemic issue affects Black women in particular at every part of their life cycles, which can add up to less healthy aging over time. I loved talking with Rachel, and I know you're going to enjoy our common sense conversation about eating and moving in a way that feels good, is sustainable for you, and helps you live with energy and purpose. Before we dive in, though, I want to talk about this season's sponsor, Vionic. The weather is finally turning wintry here, friends, and that means it's time for me to go all in on my collection of Vionic footwears, boots, and booties. I like to keep moving when the weather gets chilly and wet, and that is a lot easier to do when you've got a warm, comfortable, weather-resistant pair of boots to slip into on your way out the door. Vionic fits the bill. They have so many different styles to choose from dressier heeled boots to my casual favorite, the Lois, which is great for walking the dog or running errands. Like all of Vionic's footwear, their boots are ridiculously comfortable with three-zone comfort that offers stability, cushioning, and amazing arch support. With Vionic's 30-day wear test, you can return any pair of shoes for 30 days for a full refund, even if they've been worn outside, so there's no risk. Go to vionicshoes.com and use promo code MORE, that's M-O-R, to get free shipping on your pair of Vionics. Again, that's vionicshoes.com. And use the promo code MORE, M-O-R, for free shipping. Okay, let's get to our conversation with Rachel Hughes of the Meno Memos. Hi, Rachel. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Megan. It is a pleasure to be here with you. Thank you so much for having me.
So Rachel, I know that a big focus of your work is working with patients who experience chronic pain. And I know that's also informing now your you know, this angle you're taking with menopause. So tell us about your work and kind of what brought you to that.
Sure. So I began working with chronic pain patients about 10 years ago, and my nutrition coaching came out of that experience. So I worked alongside an integrative or functional medicine practitioner, and all of the patients who came in were suffering with either like a post-surgical neuralgia, sort of like nerve pain, chronic nerve pain, mm-hmm. or something called RSD, reflex sympathetic dystrophy, or CRPS, it's the same thing, or shingles, fibromyalgia, you know, some of the more nebulous, indescribable, not sure where I got this and why I have it, but I'm now dysfunctional kind of conditions. And so after some time working with these patients and administering a treatment, which was sort of like an electric stimulus device, I realized that no matter who walked through the door, and some people had success with the device and others had none, but they were all suffering with inflammation, which we all are to one degree or another. And what I felt strongly out of my own personal interest, but then brought it to the doctor that I was working with, was that if we could offer a program that helped people nutritionally, we might be able to help them more or sort of bring them further along in their progress. And so we worked together on that. And then I became, I got my certification, my license, and started working with people on my own in his office. And then, COVID came and all of that, and the office shut down, which was sad. And he went back to doing other things. And I, just prior to jumped on Instagram and was kind of feeling like I was suffering somehow with perimenopause. And I had by then spoken with my doctor, my gynecologist, who confirmed it. And my mother sort of weighed in and said, oh yeah, I think you're perimenopausal. And I just looked on the platform for other women, just like I wanted sort of to find information out. And I guess, misery loves company. So I was looking for other people who might sort of validate what I was going through. And I also, though, I felt I was curious about my being a Black woman. I'm a biracial woman. But being a woman of color and sort of how I was doing in that realm as well, in terms of were my symptoms greater, were they less, were there things that I needed to sort of be paying more attention to than another woman. And I just felt like I wasn't seeing a lot of other women of color talking about this particular subject. Now, of course, this was when, like, I was on Instagram, once a week, kind of scrolling around. And as I got deeper into it and started following women who were talking about the same thing, of course, I found that that wasn't true. There were plenty of women of color talking about these kinds of midlife issues. But I thought, you know what, I'm gonna throw my hat in the ring and start talking about it more. And because I felt like, in part, the work that I had done with patients and also my sort of handling or mitigating my symptoms through exercise and nutrition was seemingly mostly successful. And I also, in speaking with my gynecologist, she's the most incredible and wonderful person. And I walked into her office and I said, I've been taking a supplement for this and a supplement for that, but mostly I'm trying to eat this way and blah, blah, blah. And she said, well, is that working for you? And I said, I think mostly, but I'm just not sure. And so what came out of my conversation with her was a real sort of confirmation that she trusted what I was telling her. And it wasn't that I was opposed to medication of any kind, whether it be an antidepressant or hormone replacement therapy. And I continue to feel very strongly in favor of those treatments for women. But I just felt like at that time and since, I don't quite feel like I'm in need that way. There are other things I now know I'm in need of, but not those things. And so I felt like she was really coming alongside me in saying, you know, let's continue to do what seems like is working for you. And if at any time you feel like you need more support, then we'll circle back. And I just appreciated that because it's sort of, you know, I left the office feeling like, okay, I have control over how well I'm going to do here. And so anyway, so I sort of brought what I felt was useful information to my Instagram platform. But I'm not a clinician, you know, I'm not a registered dietitian. I know there's a lot of sort of chatter, among wellness professionals, about sort of, you know, who gets to weigh in on what's best. And I completely get that. And I think that, there's room for everybody to sort of, enter into the conversation. Yeah. And most importantly, my message, I hope, and what I'm always conscious of is that the most important thing is that a woman is in tune with herself. And so out of my conversation with my gynecologist, you know, that was sort of more impressed upon me that you need to be able to sort of come back to your own center and really gauge how you're doing. And sometimes that means asking the people around you for their input. If you are sort of going down a slippery slope of depression or anxiety, those are things to come back in for. But having to have being aware of what you should be aware of about yourself is the most important thing. Yeah. So anyway.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that deep dive, like, right. If you're just like skimming the surface of Instagram or wherever you're online, you know, doing a Google search and hitting only the top three things that come up, you get like, you get a fairly limited view. And then if you start to really dig in, wow, that's when you find all these people out there. And it's interesting that you mentioned that there's, you know, different schools of thought, different certification levels, lot of different ideas, opinions about the way things should be coming at us. And it can be really overwhelming if you're someone, especially if you're someone like who's a true layperson and just really wants to feel good. Like I'm not doing this for my job. This isn't something I'm immersed in all day long. And I sometimes wonder if it's like the desire to differentiate that has people so stridently in favor of one diet, say, or another, or one protocol or another. I'm curious, do you have what you would call a personal philosophy or a point of view when it comes to both eating and movement for the people who follow you, maybe the people you work with, or just people you know, or is it really customized?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I believe that, again, it all comes back to being able to home in on yourself and sort of piecemeal what's going on with you from head to toe and sort of follow the route that makes most sense to you. And sometimes that, as you said, that there's so much noise and so much chatter that may be hard to figure out, which is why one of the reasons why I think women in particular are so susceptible to sort of diets and diet culture is because we really just kind of want to be told what to do. We don't necessarily want to have to figure out, I don't know why I'm feeling this way. I don't care. I just want to feel better. And if you're telling me that I can do this and feel better, I just want to try it. So there's no blame at all. It's just that asking yourself questions like, not just sort of what your goals are in terms of feeling better. Maybe there's an aesthetic piece for you. Maybe you want to lose weight. Maybe you want to gain weight. Maybe you want to address acne. Maybe you want to sort of tone up, whatever it is. Kind of understanding what you can sustain is one of the most important questions to ask yourself. So for example, midlife and the ketogenic diet are very sort of aligned right now. But a true ketogenic diet is much more restrictive than a ketogenic diet that sort of floats around social media.
Like the Cheeto diet?
Yes. Yeah. You know, like the bacon and eggs and, you know, tomato diet, right? Like that's not really the best way to eat for everybody. But for a lot of people out there, that might be a great springboard and sort of open a window for you in terms of, you know, what works for you? How are you feeling? Are you energized? And really importantly, can you sustain this? Because what you don't want to do, what the body really doesn't like, is trying this and then trying that and then trying this and then trying that. So the most success you'll have, both in terms of how you feel internally and how you feel you are doing externally, the most success is going to be, is going to come from, consistency. And a ketogenic diet is just, it's like really hard, you know, and if you have, if you're juggling, you know, if you have a partner, if you have kids, like that may mean if you are the primary person in your household who's kind of running the kitchen, you might be running two or three kitchens and that's a lot. So thinking about those things too is really important. For me personally, I probably, if I had to kind of label how I eat, I probably sort of cozy up most closely to a Mediterranean diet. Mm-hmm. In that I enjoy whole grains, I enjoy oats, I enjoy potatoes, mainly sweet potatoes, I enjoy rice. I don't have that much pasta, but it doesn't make me feel that good. Right. So, you know, I eat a lot of vegetables. I eat a lot of fruit. I eat a lot of fish. I don't eat any red meat. Lately, I'm not really into chicken, but I eat it. It's just like lately, I'm just like not really into it. And I'm not going to kind of muscle my way, you know, to eating poultry because I know that it's quote unquote good for me. My body's just like not really into it now. So it's that kind of appreciating your likes, your dislikes, what's easy for you in your home, what's easy for your bank account, you know, what's accessible to you, and considering things like real healthy longevity. You know, what is going to make your next 20, 30, 40 years sort of the most healthy.
Yeah. Well, and I think, I mean, as someone who has flirted around with the keto diet on and off for years, I think that there's so much to say for that simplicity. Like there's a reason the Mediterranean diet is still kicking, right?
That's true.
It's easy. Like most people can do it. It fits even into a standard American diet. You can kind of still make the Mediterranean diet like a healthier version of that. It's like, it just somehow works. And I think the problem I've run into with keto, which I think can be very healthy, I've seen people do it in a really healthy way. But I think when you, it's like you eliminate the stuff that you know is probably not great. So, okay, like all the processed foods, that's great, right? Mm-hmm. But then what are you going to replace it with? Just like piles of bacon?
Right.
And then if you kind of go a little bit off and you eat a pile of bread and a pile of bacon, like now you're like, these two things are working at cross purposes. And I think it's too much thinking.
It's too much thinking. Yeah. And you just reminded me of another principle that I think is just really important as we get older, is that you want to be doing things, consuming things, moving, thinking, spending time with sort of people, places, things, foods that encourage sort of a gentle nurturing, right? As opposed to kind of like a really harsh, you know, the bread and the bacon and the burgers and like all of that is excessive and sort of moving in the wrong direction. Whereas you want to be eating things that kind of gently flow through your colon, you know, have an easy entry and an easy exit, you know, foods that help you feel neutral and not maybe agitated, like refined sugary foods might, or even like meat might, or processed foods might, you know, a lot of times they all go down pretty easy because they're made to go down pretty easy. But if you really sort of home in on how you feel after you eat them, you may just not feel like you ate glass. You might also feel like agitated or irritable or tired or hyper. And all of that is information for you.
You mentioned inflammation, and I know right now, it's such a buzzword.
It's such a thing.
Everyone's talking about inflammation. And I think that, again, if you're not an expert or you're not in that world, you're like, cool, I know that I want to eat an anti-inflammatory diet. I want to avoid inflammation. Okay.
Yeah.
So now what? I mean, how do you even know? And it sounds like, you know, from what I'm hearing you say, like sometimes those symptoms of inflammation perhaps, or other things going on in your body are very obvious, but sometimes they're probably not. So how do you know if that's going on?
That's such a good question. So people should assume that their levels of inflammation are higher than they want them to be, just by virtue of our lifestyles, but also by virtue of our age and the things we've consumed and the alcohol we've had, and maybe we smoked and maybe we hung out too much and too hard. And, maybe we have kids that we're taking care of, or parents that we're taking care of, or we've gone through some sort of stressor like a divorce or death, or, you know, there are all kinds of things that contribute to chronic inflammation. So there's acute and then there's chronic. And acute is what we always hear about, like the fight or flight, you know, a tiger's running after you. And but it's also things like you get stung by a bee and it swells up and it gets red and it might itch and it might hurt. That is also acute inflammation. And it's also necessary because those white blood cells are, you know, the army is readying itself and going to the point of pain and beginning the healing process. But what we know now and what we understand is that the body's understanding of or interpretation of acute inflammation or chronic inflammation is not as clear as we'd like it to be. So that same sort of feeling of ouch when you get stung by a bee or you touch a hot surface or something sort of creates the same response in your body as does dealing with a sick parent or going through a divorce or, you know, getting like really stressed about a work thing or whatever it is. The body sort of interprets that stressor as the same thing. And so when you have enough of those things, which we all do in our lives, we may develop chronic inflammation. And chronic inflammation can exacerbate symptoms of perimenopause, menopause, but also sort of become precursors to chronic diseases and autoimmune disorders. So there are a few things I would say to someone, maybe like five or six things, if you have the patience to go through
it. Absolutely.
that I would say are at play or things to consider around pain, inflammation, autoimmune issues. And these things are really about mitigation. So when you're talking about, let's say, the fluctuation of hormones triggering an increase in pain, which can happen. You know, you hear this a lot from women in perimenopause and menopause that joint pain is common, migraines may be common, just sort of general aches and pains become very, very common. That's all inflammation. But what we really sort of want to think about is the avoidance of or the reduction of those things that increase our inflammation. Now, that's much easier said than done, but if we sort of look at it, we sort of look at ourselves internally and externally and sort of attack it broadly, meaning the foods we eat, the exercise we get, the supplements we take, the way that we handle and manage stress, every little bit actually does a lot to buffer and to help sort of temper those high levels of chronic inflammation. So One thing that would be really important to think about, particularly for women in midlife and people who are thinking about autoimmune conditions or inflammation in general, is your cortisol level. So your cortisol is that stress response hormone. It's that fight or flight hormone, which is, as I said, it's like crucial in an emergency. But if it gets sort of ramped up over time or chronically, it can actually throw stress hormones, estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone out of whack. So being in that constant state, like where, as I said, you're juggling work things, relationships, family, things like this, can also deplete your thyroid hormone or the production of your thyroid hormone. So, which in turn, now you've engaged things like weight, energy, mood, skin, hair. So it's really important to think about building in time for rest or for meditation or for prayer or to be alone or to take a bath, get a massage, take a walk, spend time with a pet. Just to circle back to the hormones, like the sex hormones again. So when estrogen levels start to decrease, cortisol can increase. So this impacts your digestive process, which can be further exacerbated if you're taking iron or thyroid medication or antidepressants. So kind of getting now to the internal response, it's important to increase your consumption of fiber. So lots of whole grains and fruit, vegetables, lentils, beans, nuts, and seeds. You want to increase these things slowly. But again, it's that internal, external sort of approach to mitigating levels of inflammation, mitigating your body's response to stress. You also need to hydrate really well. That's really, really important. And again, sort of increase your water intake gradually over time. So, you know, don't have a gallon of water tomorrow if you're not a gallon of water drinker, but increase by, you know, a couple glasses a day over the course of several days. Sorry, I'm talking a lot. Should I keep going?
I do have a question. And okay, I guess that would be, is there a benefit? Let's see. Is there a benefit to getting it like tested to see your levels of these different hormones, or is it just like, just do those things anyway?
You should do these things anyway. And doctors will often tell you that testing these things really doesn't give you a tremendous amount of information. So unless you suspect you have a thyroid issue, which can sort of mimic perimenopausal symptoms, getting tested to see sort of if you are in perimenopause, you know, your hormones are going up and down over the course of the day anyway. And when you're in perimenopause, this can fluctuate wildly. So over the course of an hour, you can find that your sex hormones are up, down, up, down, up, down. So it's not really telling you anything other than that you are in perimenopause, which if you have resources, if you're asking people, if you're talking to your doctor, you can probably determine that on your own. These are things that you should be doing anyway. They're not going to hurt you. If you're contraindicated for something because you're already taking a thyroid medication, or you're already taking iron, these are questions to bring to your doctor. Unless you have a food sensitivity or an allergy, there, what you consume in terms, you know, the things that I'm suggesting you consume are not harmful to you. They're only helpful to you.
And spoiler alert, if you have female hormones, you will go through perimenopause and menopause.
You will.
It's happening, there's a pretty good chance it's happening, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I would say, you know, a lot of women don't know what's happening, right? We just are sort of thrust into this new place seemingly overnight.
Right.
And how it manifests in each woman is really different. So for a woman, for example, who's never suffered with anxiety or depression and suddenly discovers that she is feeling like the rug is always potentially about to be pulled out from under her. She really may not recognize, first of all, that that's anxiety and or depression, but she also may not recognize that that is as a result of her hormone fluctuation, i.e. perimenopause. And so, whereas a woman who starts night sweating and hot flashing, because we understand that sort of commonly.
It's a joke. It's like on sitcoms. Yes. Yeah.
It is. So that woman might go, oh, okay. Yeah, I know I'm in perimenopause. So I really can't stress enough that women, you know, find a community, reach out to friends, speak to a doctor, speak to a family member, especially if your mother is available to you and open to talking about these things, because we know that often women mimic their mother's perimenopausal experience. So if that is a conversation you can broach with a parent, do. It's really, really helpful and informative to find out from other people what's going on.
Yeah.
So that's what I would say about that.
Well, Rachel, we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, I want to talk about brain fog. I know that's something that you've dealt with. And that's one of those really, it's one of those like confusing and very alarming things. No one wants to feel like their brain is short circuiting. And we'll touch on some of the other things that can be going on when you're going through this journey. So we'll be right back. Hey, all, just a reminder that one of the best ways you can help a podcast gain traction and find its audience is by leaving a review wherever you listen. Those reviews not only help other people find the show and figure out if it's a good fit for them, but they also help us podcasters as we're planning new content and future seasons of the show. Wherever you listen, your review helps so much. So please look for Mother of Reinvention in your podcast app and leave a rating or review. Also, I would love to hear from you directly. If you've left a review and want to make sure I see it, go ahead and take a screenshot and email it to motherofreinventionshow@gmail.com, or just email me with any suggestions you might have for future episodes. Again, that's motherofreinventionshow@gmail.com. I can't wait to hear from you. Okay, Rachel, so you mentioned before we started recording that something you really struggled with as a symptom was brain fog. Is brain fog, I think you said, still something you deal with. And I have heard from so many women in their mid to late 40s and early 50s lately talking about that and how kind of alarming it is to feel like, you know, you were sharp and suddenly things are just getting a little fuzzy. So tell us what that's been like for you and what is actually going on.
Yeah, that's such a good, you're full of good questions, Megan. So brain fog, I started feeling, you know, maybe, I mean, several years, it's sort of been the one symptom that's really hung on for me. And it is also very common. Many women will describe sort of feeling forgetful, and maybe they're not using the term brain fog, but they'll say, oh, I thought maybe I was developing Alzheimer's. And that brings a lot of women to their healthcare provider for some sort of confirmation. Again, it's estrogen and progesterone, testosterone, and these sex hormones that are fluctuating but on the decline. Our hormones impact our brain health as well, and there are other things that we can do to help support it. And I certainly try and do those things nutritionally and with supplements and with exercise and with crossword puzzles and things like that. But it remains with me. And like other symptoms that have come and gone, this one's really stayed the course. It's really difficult. I first noticed it actually when I was working with the doctor I told you about, because, you know, there were just sort of daily tasks in the office that I became neglectful about. And it was weird. It felt like I was unplugged from my mind. I can't even explain it. It was like I would, there were things that were just simple, easy, you know, things I would find I was doing like at home in the kitchen, you know, it more than just like walking into a room and thinking, why am I in here? Why did I come in here? You know, but like putting things, you know, in the wrong place, or sort of forgetting where something goes, or not following up tasks at work that were like as easy as remembering where something gets put away in the kitchen. And so it was scary, and it was really, I felt sort of outer body. And it was frustrating. And I spoke to the doctor that I worked with about it, but I spoke to my mother, I spoke to friends, and they all helped sort of inform me, but also kind of give me a check on reality and sort of how bad it actually was. And then when I finally spoke to my own doctor, who said, yeah, you know, all that actually sounds pretty okay. And she sort of ran through a list of questions with me that helped inform her next steps about it. We determined that, you know, this is all, again, within the realm of perimenopause. And then there were things that I sort of dialed in further in my own sort of mitigation practices, if you will. So, for example, coinciding with the start of this brain fog thing was my inability to sleep, which is really, really, really important. And my then sort of attention, personal attention to my own cortisol levels. And, you know, sleep is like, this is another thing I would suggest to anyone, is to understand that sleep is kind of like your superpower, right? Mm-hmm. It's restorative. It's where you heal. It's where every system in your body kind of gets a reboot. But it's also essential for serotonin and dopamine. So those are your feel-good hormones, which are then crucial for good mental, emotional, physical, and hormonal health. And sleep helps to reduce excess cortisol. So as our hormones, as I said, are on the decline, cortisol is ramping up. And if you're then not sleeping well, you become more susceptible to anxiety, depression, brain fog, but also being tired increases hunger hormone called ghrelin. I would say it wrong. Ghrelin.
Oh, yes. I've seen it spelled out. Yep. I never knew how to say it. Okay.
Yeah. And so what happens a lot then when you're tired and you're sleep deprived is that you start eating more. And poor sleep can also affect blood sugar regulation. So now you're wanting to grab on to things that are giving you a kick and giving you a boost. All of these things combined are going to contribute to your worst symptoms. So all of those things contributed to my brain fog. So I know that if I have alcohol, for example, I can almost guarantee I'm going to get a crappy night's sleep. And many women in midlife will say the same thing. So, you know, where I used to have a glass of wine 3 times a week, that is absolutely out of my wheelhouse now. Right. I just can't do it. I'm too dysfunctional. So, appreciate that sleep is it's our most powerful sort of upregulating tool. And so how you can make it a priority, however you can, is really critical. So if that means a nighttime routine where maybe you take a shower or a bath, or you unplug from your devices, you take a magnesium supplement, use a sleep mask, essential oils are really helpful for some people, particularly lavender. Those are all things to consider incorporating to help you get a good night's sleep.
Wow. Okay. So with brain fog in particular, it sounds like, so there's a lot going on. It's not just like one thing that's making this happen. Is that the kind of thing, and a lot of the things that you're describing that can kind of come along with perimenopause and menopause, is it once you're past a certain point, balance back out again? Is there relief on the horizon from these symptoms? Or is it like, I don't know. It sounds, I think you could get the idea that this is just the beginning of a decline.
You know, it's all bad. No, that's so great that you pointed that out. That's absolutely not true. So I will say that there are some women who report that certain things sort of hang on in postmenopause. So for example, I know a woman who's well into her 70s and still has hot flashes. She doesn't have them as much as she had them when she was perimenopausal, but she gets the occasional hot flash, and she's always incensed that she's having one because, you know, she's like over 20 years out from her last period. It happens. But it's not, I wouldn't say it's common. And I would say that I don't know a woman who's postmenopausal who hasn't been wildly encouraging in saying, this will get better, to me or to any other perimenopausal person I know. So whether it's physical symptoms that sort of come to their end, or mental, emotional symptoms that level off, there is an end game,
right?
And it's largely positive. Women describe an increase in energy. Fatigue is a big thing.
Yeah.
So women describe sort of feeling like, my God, I slept and it's great, and I have more energy now. And you know, I see this a lot in my own life. You know, women I know who are perimenopausal have zero desire to go out at night. You know, we're all talking about like 8, 9 o'clock, ready to hit bed. And then postmenopausal women are like ready to get at it again.
Yeah.
Can enjoy a social life that maybe has felt sort of out of reach for several years prior. So yes, also no, stress is really kind of like the umbrella that can make everything worse. So, you know, whether we're talking about inflammation specifically, or we're talking about things like, making better food choices, or getting a good night's sleep, or making sure you get an exercise. If there is a way for you to access mitigating stress on a daily basis, please try and do that. So whether it's talk therapy, or if it's just like, you know, watching a 5-minute YouTube video, or Headspace app, or taking a walk, walking a dog, whatever it is that helps you, be intentional about that, because stress may not go away once you're postmenopausal, right? But it will still have impact on your health. So sort of appreciating how important that piece is to everything over these years, whether you're peri or post, is really, really important.
Rachel, you mentioned early in the episode that one of the things you really ran up against was not seeing a lot of other women of color in this space. And then you found them. You went to the Instagram and you found them. But I know there's been so much in the news about disparities in healthcare with women of color in particular. I'm thinking in obstetric care and, well, you know, in maternity care. But this is obviously probably also trickling through to perimenopausal and menopausal care. How are you seeing that now that you're kind of out there and part of that community? Are you seeing that being addressed? Are you part of a community that's helping to address that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I have to be completely frank and say that I believe for myself personally, I remain someone in the room who's saying, hey, this needs attention.
Yeah.
And not necessarily the activist out in the world saying, here's where attention is, and here's what exactly can be done to address this. My feeling is I am a person of color in the room talking about this, and as I am representing, I guess, if
yeah.
you will.
Mm-hmm.
And the disparities are so great. Every single sort of component around healthcare, if you will, has an amazing amount of problems. The amount of stress for particularly Black women in general, because of either what we now know, you know, the term we now say is microaggressions, from that to actual sort of practices that make life more difficult for her. Those things will also negatively impact her ability to age healthfully.
Yeah.
And so I am not quite sure yet sort of what next steps are for me around this. I just know that I want to be a louder voice in the room. And, you know, so we'll see. I wish I sort of had more of a language other than frustration and anger to speak about these things. I don't have numbers and facts. I know that Black women are generally twice as likely as other women to suffer from, breast cancer, thyroid issues, diabetes, heart disease, chronic illness, chronic pain. That has to all do with primarily do with social issues. Of course, genetics weighs in here and there, but you know, when you have access, when you are, when access to healthcare, access to great food, access to, physicians who listen and spend time and believe you. And, you know, there's generational issues. There's all kinds of things that weigh in here. And I would be lying if I said it didn't overwhelm me at times. And I think my problem is sort of not feeling paralyzed by the wave.
And, you know, I think that we hear about these things almost like in a silo. So we'll hear, Black women are disproportionately affected by breast cancer or hypertension or diabetes or some chronic disease. And you're like, oh, okay, well, that's applies to a very specific set of women at a specific age, but it compiles through your whole life. So if you have access to great healthcare when you're a teenager or in your childbearing years, like it all's cumulative.
It's absolutely cumulative.
We might not see the results until post-menopause maybe or menopause-ish time, but like it's been happening the whole time.
That's a really good point. This is sort of the albatross of our nation, of this country, is ensuring real, true equality on all things for all people. And, that's a whole can of worms to get into, but it's critical that we do. And I think, certainly, like I said, when I first got on the Instagram platform, I didn't see many women of color who were in midlife talking about whatever that looked like for them. But it was only a matter of time before I recognized that that wasn't true. And, as much as we sort of complain about social media, certainly I do, I also recognize that it really does provide an amazing amount of sort of space for people to walk into and carve out their own niche, their own voice, their own room to speak about what's going on with them, what's going on outside of them, and really kind of bring people together. And we know this can have negative impact as well, but in this realm,
it is giving a voice to people in that wouldn't have had one. And then in aggregate, you can pull together lots of voices and, it has its frustrations and its downsides, but I definitely see the power there for sure. Well, Rachel, we're going to have to wrap up, but I have one more question for you. And that is, and I mean this in all of like physically, emotionally, mentally, and all those things, if you had to define what feeling good means to you, what is that?
Ooh.
I know that's a big question.
It's so juicy. my initial, my springboard is always around food. Food is like a love language for me. And I want to feel physically grounded and healthy and alert and energized and calm. And so food will always be the thing that where I start to sort of make myself feel good. But all of those things are true sort of spiritually as well. You know, I want to feel grounded in the world and, you know, being with my family and friends and people who I trust and have history with, makes me feel really good. Overall, I guess I would say, you know, feeling good is about feeling safe. It's about feeling joy. I think we can't laugh enough. And I don't mean that even in response to sort of the climate we're living through right now, but I mean, really, truly just, feeling joyful, you know, sort of being in a state of, peace and calm and no judgment is always a great thing. You know, that makes me feel good. If I'm neither being judgmental or feeling judged, I think is really important. Yeah. You know, feeling purposeful, I think is something that makes me feel good. When I look at this again, this Instagram platform, I feel sort of like it feels like it makes me feel good. It makes me feel good to share information that I think is helpful to women. And, I'm not getting anything out of it. Like, I'm really just there because I think it makes me feel good to say to women, you are dynamic, you are wonderful, you are smart, you are valued, you are considered, and you are wise and beautiful, and all of these things. And that makes me feel good and of purpose.
I love it. Well, definitely check out the Menno Memos, both the website, themennomemos.com, and your Instagram. Rachel, it has been a pleasure having you on. Thank you so much.
Such a pleasure. I loved talking with you, although I talk mostly at you, but it was so much fun.
I was absorbing it. I was just taking it in like a sponge. So
thank you, Megan, so much. It was a pleasure.
Well, thanks everyone for listening to this episode of Mother of Reinvention. Like always, everything from today's episode will be in the show notes at motherofreinventionshow.com. And don't forget to check out our sponsor, Vionic, and my favorite fall loafer, the Willa Flat. Remember, you can get free shipping by going to vionicshoes.com and using the code MORE, that's M-O-R, at checkout. If you are loving this show, it would help me out a lot if you leave me a rating or review wherever you listen to podcasts. And remember, you can always send an email at motherofreinventionshow@gmail.com. Okay, friends, thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back with another great episode next Thursday. Talk to you soon.